Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new edition of Pod by the Bay. I'm your host, Nathan Bond. Joining alongside me, as always, Seth Barnador. Seth, a jam-packed show, and not only because the South Florida Bulls men's basketball season is officially over, but some late-breaking rumor mill revolving around USF women's head basketball coach, Jose Fernandez, kind of breaking here on a late Monday afternoon. So we'll dive into that. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't start with men's basketball, their season ending on Sunday with a 70-65 loss at the hands of VCU, who held USF to maybe their worst three-point shooting performance of the season. If it wasn't the worst, it was right up there, and it had been quite a while since the Bulls shot that poorly from behind the arc in a meaningful game. Seth, you watched it on TV. I was there in person, so I do take blame for that. But I needed to see this team in person once before the season ended, and I was glad to be able to do it. The crowd was great. But what did you see on TV from this South Florida Bulls team that maybe you hadn't seen for the last like month and a half or so?
You know, I thought at times a little bit out of sorts, especially in the first half, almost like going too fast at times is how it felt, kind of being a little bit careless. But, you know, it's when you are a team that relies so much on the three-pointer, now they are not like overly reliant on it, but they do shoot a lot of threes. When you're a team that plays like that and you miss a ton, you know, it's going to be tough. They still had their chances in the game, and that's the kind of, you know, at halftime it's like, oh, you're only down a couple and you haven't really played very well. It doesn't feel like you've played well. So you got a chance. And then the end of the game, we saw they had chances. So, you know, sometimes we talked about it on the Ponderosa preview. Two pretty similar teams, we thought, in terms of how they played. And I think that kind of played out a little bit. And just VCU shot the ball a little bit better, and USF wasn't able to kind of get the normal contributions from a couple of guys that I think would have pushed him over the top. Chris Youngwell did play very well and kind of kept them in that game. Right. But some of the other guys that had been key contributors throughout the season didn't play their best game of the year, and you needed just a little bit more. And but, you know, it's tough to go out like that at home, but an excellent season, a lot of things to build on. Seems like there's going to be some guys coming back. Not exactly sure who, but you could bring back theoretically all your major contributors. So great building block, great first season. You know, when first season, the winning this season in team history is pretty good. But yeah, just kind of just couldn't quite get over that hump in that second half. Once you got down, you just couldn't quite get back over it.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between kind of USF the last month or so and what we saw Sunday night, it was Sup Miguel had his worst game of the season, like by far. He, to put it nicely, he was horrendous on offense. 2 of 12, obviously missed the potential game tying free throw. But God bless him, he kept trying to drive right and get to the basket, and it just wasn't working. He was 0-for-4 from three. A lot of ball stopping possessions from him on Sunday, trying to force some things, especially early on. He got sat for quite a while, just trying to get USF a different look. I think he went back into the game with about 4 or 5 minutes left as USF tried to get some more offense on the floor. But, I mean, you had your chances. I still do not understand how Jaden Reed's layup late in the second half didn't fall. Like, it was, like, halfway down the net. Yeah. And just decided to pop back out. There was like the first like initial pop from the crowd as it felt like literally halfway down. and then just pop back out. It was that was frustrating. And then you finally you get a chance. I mean, Jaden was clutch down the stretch with a couple of massive threes, and Chris Youngblood put the team on his freaking back. And it was, what, 10 of 16 from the field, made all seven free throws, had led all scores with 28. Like, the dude was unstoppable for the entire game. I noticed it early on. He got Max Shulga down low on a post-up and just worked him straight into an easy, like, little turnaround hook shot. Like, it was – he got whatever he wanted on offense. And that was the surprising part. Max Shulga played 24 minutes, and we kind of previewed him. I was like, all right, this guy shoots 41% from three. Like, you're going to have to be able to stop him. He only plays 24 minutes. And I was looking back at his game log. That's the fewest minutes he's played all season since, like, November 12th, like, when the season just started. So I don't know what was going on there. The difference maker for VCU was Zeb Jackson, who was 4 of 7 from three on the night, where he came into the game as a 30% three-point shooter. So you stop the guy who was a 41% three-point shooter, and then the guy who you really weren't worried about hits four. So I don't know. That kind of game. And, you know, honestly, looking ahead, I think VCU's got to play Utah on Wednesday, and kind of glad USF's not playing Utah, because boy, how do they look big. They are just on a pure number basis, Utah is the fifth tallest team in the country.
Yeah, and you saw that a little bit rear its ugly head, where there were a couple times where you just needed a key rebound, but you had to rotate, like, a guy like Chris Youngblood onto a big, and you couldn't get that rebound towards the end of the game. I think it ends up in a foul. And there's just a few moments like that where you can see the weaknesses of the team. But really, this was just I think this is two teams that are pretty evenly matched. And one team just shot the ball a little bit better. And that ended up being the difference for the most part. I don't think USF, you know, it wasn't like they blew it. And it wasn't like they played awful. They just didn't shoot the ball great, which they'd been shooting the ball really well at home all year. So
yeah,
those things kind of happen. And, you know, we've seen the last few weeks that, you know, like, when this team doesn't shoot the ball well, they can lose to bad teams. But I thought they were a little bit more aggressive getting the ball inside than they had been in previous games. Like, Tulsa game comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Thought they settled for a lot more threes, only taking 20. I think they took 20 and a half in the last few games. So they definitely were trying to be a little more patient. It just seemed at times, and I think Selton Miguel maybe even been guilty of this, they just looked like they were pressing a little bit. And there were a few times where maybe they could have taken control of the game, or you know, the Case and Pryor turnaround, tried to throw it off somebody, resulting in a layup and a, you know, a flagrant foul. Like, it looked to me like, and I'm not running full speed trying to catch it, it looked to me like he could have maybe took the ball, settled himself, called a timeout, or just took the ball, settled himself in the corner.
I don't think he was as close to, I don't think he was close to out of bounds as he thought he was.
Yeah.
From my angle, it didn't look like he, like, the out of bounds line was,
I thought he had some
third defender. Like,
yeah. So that was my thought as well. I thought he maybe had more time in the corner than he thought he did. And that, so, you know, you just, if he just simply catches that, calls timeout, that's like a 4-point swing.
Yeah.
So it's this is what happened. And this is why tournaments are so fun and why they're so frustrating, because, you know, two plays here or there and it could be the difference between winning and losing. So, but that's why we love March.
It was a fun season. I mean, obviously, you know, truthfully, only like two teams, you know, and end their year on a high note. You know, head coach Amir Abdul-Rahim tried so hard not to disparage the CBI last night during his press conference, and he tried his hardest not to be like, I mean, the CBI doesn't matter, but he essentially said the CBI doesn't matter. Like, this is actual postseason basketball for the first time since 2012.
Yeah.
And to see what this fan base, how the fan base reacted, was pretty phenomenal. And what, 25-8, first time in program history, your regular season conference champions. And then the game that you absolutely dreaded, you won. You beat Central Florida at Central Florida in the first round of the NIT. Like, there was not a bad moment after the first six games of the year. Like, everything else was picture perfect. And sometimes this stuff happens. I feel terrible for Selton Miguel, how it ended for him. Maybe he's back next year. I'm sure he's going to test the waters, right? Whether it be the transfer portal or overseas or something like that. I'm sure Cason Pryor, who, boy, howdy, we got the full Cason Pryor experience on Sunday night. I'm sure he's going to enter the portal, at least see what's out there. And God bless them.
They need to do like a Busch Gardens NIL deal for a roller coaster. Because that is the full Cason Pryor experience. Yes. There are some highs. There are some lows. We're moving around pretty quick. Sometimes we're in control. Sometimes we're out of control. And how many dribbles have we taken so far? If it was more than three,
we're in trouble.
Who knows what's going to happen? So, yeah, it's that. Maybe there's a potential. There's a potential NIL deal to keep him in place. Let's get a roller coaster.
We'll see what happens. Head coach Amir was very vocal at the very end of his press conference, where, quite frankly, I was getting pretty slap happy. It was like almost 11 o'clock at night. And I think maybe he was too. And he just kind of reamed out every single coach, administrator, whomever, who opted out of the NIT. He did not mince his words. He essentially called it soft and not what college basketball is about. And with the way college basketball is going, he thinks it's kind of soft that that happened, and even made a point to say, so just because, essentially pointing out that Oklahoma opts out, but now Central Florida gets a home game just because they're a Power Five football in a Power Five football conference. The inequity, I think we're going to see more and more of, as we head toward it. And I think the thing that we're going to talk about later, it probably has something to do with it as well, where I think you can, in this conference, in this league, even with all the best resources that you can possibly imagine, there's a glass ceiling that's been put in front of you that you're never going to crack. So there's going to be some pretty serious conversations, I would imagine, from USF and the like, and the American as a whole, is how do we break through that glass ceiling? Where do we go from here? How do we get the ever important P5 invite? Because it seems like there is a ceiling. And
cheer for Florida State and Clemson.
Yeah.
If you're a lawyer, chip in some pro bono work to help them pour through those contracts.
Yeah,
because that seems to be the quickest way.
Yep. So, we'll see how it goes. But I mean, as we wrap up this season, and we'll talk more about a season as we kind of get a little bit further removed from it as a holistic, and as we get deeper into recruiting for this upcoming basketball season. Any kind of final thoughts? Do you want to put a bow on this men's basketball season for you?
You know, to me, this team consistently defied expectations. I think that would be how I would right now remember this team. Obviously, the win total defied everybody's kind of wildest expectations. But, you know, even that, you know, the game against UCF, I think a lot of us were like, man, this sucks. That's a tough matchup on the road. But they went in there and won. Charlotte, or, you know, it's a tough matchup on the road. They went in there and won the regular season championship. So I think the team will be remembered, obviously, for some historical winning, and then also just being a pretty fun team to watch as well. This is not like a slog basketball They play a nice brand of basketball. They share the ball, shoot threes. Fun team to watch. And when you're winning and do a long streak, that's also a lot of fun too. So I think this will be remembered as a really fun team and hopefully like the foundation of a really, really good era of basketball.
Absolutely. I think it was, it gave me hope that I think the entirety of the athletic program is kind of heading in the right direction. We saw it start with volleyball and just kind of snowball to every other sport. Outside of men's soccer, but that's
to me, just even if they didn't win as much, the way they played is just so much more pleasing to the eye than
football. Oh, God,
it's just like it's so much easier to watch, so much more fun. And then you add in that they're winning a ton too.
Yeah, just, I was talking to a couple of USF officials prior to the game, just kind of comparing, contrasting, you know, the NIT, basically the teams from the CBI year and whatever, and just like even though they won the CBI, which again not much, but it's something, right? And they won 24 games, like it was they won a lot of games. It was just ugly basketball all the time. Like you're winning 52-48, like that's not fun. That's boring basketball. At least with this style of basketball, you're getting a lot of driving kicks, 3-point shots. You shoot the ball a lot better. It's just a stylistically more appealing to fans and to the masses. I don't think you get this kind of crowd if you're in Virginia, 50-48 rock fights. Like,
yeah, no,
that's not fun. That's not fun for anyone to sit through what 2.5 hours of your life just to see teams shoot under 40% from the field and 55% from the free throw line. It's disgusting basketball.
Yeah, no, I think that's a big part of it. It's the stylistic, but you got both. You got the best of both worlds. You had fun team to watch that also won a lot of games. So awesome year one.
Absolutely. And to that end, let's transition to something that's kind of breaking. And honestly, probably should have happened a lot sooner. From Mitchell Northam, sources familiar with the coaching search say that there's mutual interest between Miami and USF head coach Jose Fernandez to fill the vacancy left by Katie Meyer's retirement. Miami native and FIU grad, you know, kind of goes on to speak about Jose's accomplishments and I don't want to speak out of turn, but it's happening. Like, it's happening. Jose Fernandez, like, it would be an absolute shock if Jose Fernandez is not the next head coach of the University of Miami's women's basketball team. The guy's been here since 2000. He has turned this program into the perennial winner that it has been. He is, honestly, I think he's the best coach USF has ever had. And it sucks, but we talk about glass ceilings. You can only go so far, especially in women's basketball. And we've talked, I think a couple weeks ago, we were in the Discord, Seth, we were kind of talking about like, okay, Final Four teams, you add up the seeds. And, you know, with men's basketball, it's a little bit more chaotic. You can kind of get a higher number. But with women's basketball, it's pretty freaking consistent. You know, you add up the four seed numbers for the Final Four teams, and it's like four. There's a five. Oh, there's a three seed. Oh, four. Maybe a seven. Like it,
if they have an unbelievable player.
Right. And, like, that's just what women's basketball is. And you can only get, like, your USF has had to schedule their non-conference slate so tough because the conference they play in sucks. For the last decade, outside of UConn, the conference has sucked. You know, there was a, I think, a streak of, what, 7 or 8 years where it was UConn USF in the conference final. I think USF up until I think last season had never not made this at least the semifinals of the conference tournament. So you can only do so much, and it's not like Michael Kelly and the athletic department's not giving him resources. He has them. It's just not enough for in women's basketball, especially. You're trying to compete against Florida State, your Florida, Miami's historically always been really good at women's basketball. Saw it a couple years ago in the NCAA tournament where they smacked the crap out of USF. Like it's just a different ballgame. You get a different caliber of player to go to these ACC schools that you don't hear. That's why he had to go to Europe to find his best players. It's a tough beat, but I think we can be thankful that he was here and decided to stay here for as long as he has, because he could have been up out of here a decade ago. And he decided to stick around. And, you know, he's 53, 50, he's 52. He's had a couple of health things. Like, if not now, when? And that's kind of what I'm chopping it up to. If not now, when? When's the time for him to make the leap and, you know, go to the upper echelon? Like, his name should be mentioned with the Genos, the Don Staley's, Kim Mulkey's. Like, he's that good of a head coach.
Yeah, and I think if you're, you know, naturally, if you're a competitor and you feel like you're kind of somewhat, I wouldn't say held back, but obviously playing from behind a little bit in terms of recruiting just because of where you're at, and you can go somewhere. You know, I don't think he would say that he hasn't, you know, I don't think he'd leave with any regrets. He wouldn't leave with any bad feelings. It might not be the worst time for him if he wants that next challenge and kind of get a chance to play on a more level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be a bad time to do it. Just, he's done, I think, just about everything he could possibly do. And, you know, I don't think there'd be any hard feelings on either side. So just one of those things where if you get this opportunity, and funny enough, this is something Steve kind of brought up. I was looking back through the Discord. He brought this up when when Miami's coach retired, that he's got some familiarity down there. So he would be a name that would probably garner some interest. So, Nostrastigas again, another great call. He must have some Miami connections with that DeMarcus Van Dyke call, and then this one.
I know. I mean, golly,
Steve Vice down there.
I know. Jeez. Maybe Jeff Scott could have used him down there. All his connections. Jeez Louise. But. Yeah, I'd be shocked if it's not done by like Wednesday. This is just kind of a gut feeling, gut play, just kind of reading the tea leaves. I've talked to a couple people, nothing concrete. They're just kind of seeing which way the wind blows, and it's not blowing in favor of USF, that's for sure.
How often do names get brought up in women's college basketball coaching searches like this that aren't the guy or the person for the job? The speculation is rampant. I'm not been involved in a lot of women's college basketball searches, so I'm not sure if the speculation is as wild on that end as it is in football and men's basketball. But
We'll see what happens. I guess now's the time. Hot Board 1.0. Brought to you by yours truly, Nathan Bond and Seth Barnador. I'll say mine, and then you can give yours. Yours is pretty compelling.
Got my AD hat on.
Yeah. FIU head coach Jessica Burks-Wiley. She coached at USF as an assistant for 3 years. She went down to FIU, and 3 years ago, her first season, had the first winning season since 2012. they were 15 and 16 last season, and then they, I think they won over 20 games this year. She was coach of the year at FIU, and kind of people who know FIU know how their athletic department operates or does not operate. Being that good at FIU is like winning a national championship. I think she'd be a fantastic fit here. She knows the culture. She knows the people. You know, she knows the culture of USF. Now, it would be, I think they could probably get her at a saving a lot of money with Jose, the $1 million buyout. I think she's making maybe $200,000 a year at FIU. So you could match that and then some. So we'll kind of see how that goes, but I'm intrigued by your name on the hot board here. Looking at this person's resume, it makes a lot of sense why you kind of honed in on this one.
Yeah. So I was, you know, we were talked earlier about the men's basketball, just style of play being interesting. So, you know, I thought, all right, if you're gonna have to replace a coach, what style of play would you like? So my second kind of, so that's my first thought, you know, style of play, probably want somebody offensive background. Then, you know, thinking about it a little more, I was like, all right, let's look and see, is because like you mentioned, a lot of times the best teams, the most talented teams are those high seeds. So I wanted to see kind of how tied is kind of your talent level to the offensive rating in women's basketball. Is it pretty close? Is it, you know, the best, the teams, the best players or have the best offense? Like, and it is a little bit like Iowa. Their offense is really good. Shocker. But I saw FGCU was 13th in offensive rating. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what their deal is. So I went and looked at them and I saw their coach is a guy named Carl Semesco. He's been at FGCU for like 20 years. And it's been insane. So his record as his overall career winning percentage as a head coach is 832. Overall as a head coach, his record is 672 and 136, and they shoot a ton of threes. So his teams play kind of an up and down, shoot a ton of threes style. There was a stat in here. Okay, here we go. At FGCU, 14 straight 25 win seasons, 20 straight 20 win seasons, 14 ASUNs regular season titles, 10 NCAA tournament berths, and 13 years of postseason eligibility, and 4 NCAA first round wins. They win in his 12th seed in NCAA tournament history. So, really interesting profile, but we were just kind of talking about a little bit beforehand. Seems like he's gotten advances from other schools through the years and has stayed at FGCU. He's been there for about 20 years now. He's been there for a long time. So he may not want to leave, but it seems like he got offered the Pitt job last year. Pitt wanted to talk to him. And in that article, it says he makes about $440,000. And he's got a 5-year rolling contract, so just stays at a 5-year contract just because they basically want him to be the coach for life there.
Yeah.
But it seems like USF could possibly, you know, maybe double his money or get pretty close, and you wouldn't have to relocate too far. I don't know. I think it'd be worth a call. It's just I've never heard of FGCU women's basketball, and their numbers are just mind-boggling. So I think they said his record in the ASUN tournament is 30-2.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. They've won the regular season and the conference tournament every year since 2018. They've made a postseason tournament every season since they went D1 back in 2006. It's been either NIT or NCAA first, second round. He's been to the second round a couple of times. Played Oklahoma really close in the first round of the NCAA tournament this season, lost by three as a 12 seed. It makes sense. He makes $440,000 a year. Jose makes about $800,000 a year at USF. There, he does have $1 million buyout. So that there's some money to play with, but you also got to think about the department as a whole. That $1 million could come in handy with Amir and Golish, and maybe you go the Jessica route, or you want to keep the keep and maintain. You know, you want a winning head coach who knows what, who's been around the block quite a while. Carl Smith goes is a very good option. Again, these two names, I want to be perfectly clear. These are just Seth and I off the top, yeah, like
conjecture.
45 minutes after kind of hearing, okay, Jose's probably gone. Let's start looking forward. Those were the two that kind of jumped out to us as we kind of start prepping for this.
This is, they haven't won fewer than 24 games since 2010. It's wild. That's, since worst seasons, 22-9. I don't know what that conference is like, but this dude has won 13 conference coach of the years, and I think there were like 11 of them in a row ending with this past year. I don't know if he won it this year. It's not up there. It's not updated if he did, but won like 10 conference coach of the years in a row. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you got JU, I think Kennesaw, obviously Kennesaw, North Florida, Queens University, Stetson. So these are, like, you know, on the men's basketball side, pretty good, but you don't really hear much with that. So it's
just an interesting it's just an interesting person I've never, ever heard of, and he's like a legend.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. 670 wins. All right.
That's not bad.
As you do.
So the it's a halfway decent option. But again, obviously nothing's final until it is, but I would start prepping for USF women's basketball to have a different head coach in the 2024-2025 season.
There you go.
And if something breaks, we'll probably have a Ponderosa and we'll kind of discuss how things went down, things of that nature. I'll be working sources for the next 24, 48 hours trying to figure out what's kind of going on. But with that.
And you want to do a quick. Let me throw in a quick football thing.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I totally forgot. Football is still a thing, huh?
Yeah, quick football.
I thought we were a basketball school for a minute there.
We're back, baby. We're on to spring football. Golish, I believe earlier today, had his press conference. One tidbit that stuck out to me, because I don't think you've had a chance to listen yet, because they didn't do it live like they normally do, but they did put it up on YouTube later. But, he was talking about how strong the slot receiver room was and said they'll be able to do some interesting personnel things with that. To me, that says you might see some more 10 personnel, 4 receiver stuff. So, and he mentioned Jaquan Smith and Brandon Winton as both guys that are, he mentioned them both a couple times, not only at slot, but also returning punts as well. So, seems like both those guys may be in line to get some play. But, you know, he mentioned those two, obviously Sean Atkins and then Naeem Simmons. As your 4 slot guys that are, then he said there's a lot of competition in the room that might let him play some interesting personnel. So to me, that says 4 receiver stuff, which could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Didn't really get much of that at all last season. Due to depth and other issues. Protecting the quarterback. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what transpires as we get deeper into spring. I doubt we may see maybe one play of 10 personnel in the spring game, but don't doubt. Don't
anticipate that. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there.
But that was kind of the one thing that stuck out. Other stuff was, defensive backfield feels pretty good with the depth there, which was a concern going into the offseason. They obviously tried to fill that room big time. So must feel pretty good with some of the guys they've added there. So that's good to hear. But, yeah, the one thing that stuck out to me was the receiver thing. Because when you start talking about personnel things, it says to me, all right, we want to get a couple of these guys on the field at the same time. What's the easiest way to do that? Go four receivers. 10 personnel is one back, no tight ends, four receivers. So that's the tea leaves I'm reading there. So
yep,
could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's the football update.
Well, thank you, Seth, for that. And we'll get deeper into football since basketball's wrapped up. It was again really fun season. Super proud of this team. And I can't wait for next year and see what they can do, build off of it. With that, be safe, be nice. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.